Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Joining me today is Mr. Andy Merrick. My friend, how are you? How's life?
Dude, welcome. Welcome to life. Welcome to June 21st. Beautiful outside today.
I don't remember where you are, but it is swelteringly hot again here. It is uncomfortable.
It's the same where I am. I'm okay with that. I say, okay. Bring it. Yeah. I eat all that. I say there's like 10 days out of the year where you get that kind of nastiness. And it's like, that's like, I don't know, 3% of the year. Bring it. Bring it. Let it, let Mother Nature challenge. And let's see if I can rise up to it.
So when it gets above 85, I'm just a cranky old man and I don't want to be outside. And thankfully, I was a little nervous last week. So last week was the end of the first week. It was like real hot this summer, and I didn't know how the puppy was going to react. And like, he's either going to love it or he's going to hate it. He doesn't like it either. So I'm like, oh, thank God. thank God. Now I don't feel like too. An ass. Yeah.
You take it from me. For me, take it to 115 and we'll see. We'll see like where I stand with it.
Definitely no thank you. But anyway, before we dive into kind of talking about the season as a whole, I'm always curious, if somebody who's like as involved in you are in everything you create in social media, my first question is, on a weekend like last weekend when there's no racing, are you happy? Are you sad? Like when there's no IndyCar, are you happy? Yeah. Are you like, are you bummed out? Are you bored? Or, you know, what does Andy do on an off weekend?
Yeah, that's a great question, man, because it's like I can see even from my own life, there's sometimes I think you get to the end of some sessions when you're working, you're like, oh, man, like I'm so tired, like kind of from being focused. That's what a lot of it is. Yep. From just being focused on what you're doing. But at the same time, you're like, congratulations, dude, like great job. You know, like that's how I feel a lot of times when like sessions end. It's like, that was so much fun. That was so cool. For me, I live so much in the moment. Like I just like to be, just exist. And so whatever's happening, I'm about it. If it's like the weather's a perfect thing. If it's 110 outside, I'm about it. If it's 10 degrees outside, I'm about it. If it's a race weekend, I love that. If it's not, I'll go and chill with my friends and go do something, maybe out on a lake, maybe out on a bike ride, maybe doing something else. So for me, it's like I'm a both and. Like whatever's happening, I'm about it.
I definitely understand that race weekend feeling, because there are weekends, and especially I think this year in particular, as we've taken on more and more and I've been running around, you know, Frenchie's helped out a couple weekends when he could, but you know, there's some weekends like when I'm especially driving back and, you know, it's a long drive from whatever state I'm in and I am completely mentally exhausted, like just 0.0% left on the energy level. And that Monday when I'm going through emails, I'm pretty much like a zombie. So like this weekend, Saturday, I slept in. Now there's only so much sleeping in you can do with a puppy, but you know, I pushed it to like 9 o'clock until I was like, okay, you should probably go out. But I didn't move that much. Played a round of par three golf on Sunday morning with Cody Bray, which was pretty fun. But it was nice to just like not have that like complete mental exhaustion when the weekend ended. And I had yesterday off, so I had a day to just kind of like chill out. But anyway, moving on from that, yeah, you do a lot of really cool things on social media, from posting about, you know, making awesome looking TV graphics on whether it's when things are or the TV ratings, or, you know, hey, this weekend at Road America, there are 3 or 4 different strategies and this is how it all played out. And how'd you decide to kind of specialize in that, because it's very good? And B, how much time does a, you know, let's just take the Road America one I just mentioned to you, where you're kind of talking about tire strategy over the last handful of races. How long does that take?
Well, first of all, thanks for those words. It's really nice of you to say that about my work. A lot of this stuff I just do for fun. And so I have no idea how long it takes on the one hand. I'll take a guess at a couple of things for you. But yeah. When I'm doing this stuff, I think of it like building a city. And so for me, I'm just working on skills with all of this stuff. I love the racing. The racing is so cool. But even beyond that, for me, I'm trying to build up other skills inside of myself. So things like project management and like delivering value to people who are going to see things. Things like graphic design and copywriting and computer programming. These are all things that I continue to try to build up my skills in. And so a lot of this stuff, when I start doing it, I really find myself kind of just in flow. Like I get to a place where I really lose track of time, but when I'm doing it, I kind of think about it like I'm building a city. This is probably like way too esoteric of an answer, but it's really the way that I think about it. Like when a city, you've got infrastructure like roads and power lines and water. And so with a lot of my stuff, when I'm building some of these graphics, like you're kind of building systems at first where you're just kind of collecting data and putting it inside of like kind of containers on your computer. And then you're building up some graphic things that are on top of that. So some of it's just the collecting of the data, and then some of it's building the system so that you can pull that data back out. And then it's like displaying that data, you know, in something that actually makes sense. And so there's a lot of this stuff that's like, I like to iterate on things. So it's like build and then measure and then learn from it and then keep building, measure, learn. So like from week to week, if you were to compare that race strategy graphic from like this season so far, you'll see like small differences in it, like every single week, because I just like building and creating stuff. It's just part of who I am. A graphic like that, you're looking at like, so kind of like collecting data at first. A lot of that data collection I probably do within like an hour or something like that. Probably takes about an hour to collect the data and kind of put it in places that I want it to be. The programming for the graphic itself, that took me like, I don't know, it depends, maybe 6 to 8 hours that thing has taken me total to kind of build that part of it up. But once you get that part done, then it's like, now I'm just pushing a button to generate stuff off of the data that I've already collected. You know, so it's like you kind of pay. That's why I say it's kind of like an infrastructure in a city where you build up those lower end systems. And then you're just pushing buttons, eventually collecting some data. And I'm always trying to eliminate the toil and the annoying parts about it, trying to automate different things. And that's the challenge for me, like on the system side. And I get as excited about that, like 50-50, as I do about like the racing stuff and producing the graphic and then having other people hopefully get some value out of it.
Yeah, I mean, they're all, even the one that's, you know, here are the TV times this weekend, or here are the on-track times, sometimes they come out before the IndyCar ones does, that us media people look at. But I save almost all of them to my phone so I can reference them as I'm running around somewhere, or, you know, I'm texting it with, usually with Kevin Dejewski. I'm like, hey, did you get this? Do you know where you need to be? You know, because he's doing some Indy Pro 2000 photos and whatnot, so we're always kind of helping each other out with what time it is. So they're always handy, and I do see what you mean. I've seen them kind of evolve as the year has gone on into, you know, slightly different looking and whatnot. So that all makes sense. But you know, we're 8 races in to a 17 race year, so kind of like technically not at the halfway point, but this is the longest break we have until the end of August, maybe, if not the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure. There might be another 3-week break in there at some point, but I'm not sure. I don't think so. So what are your, if you were to give, we're just going to go through some random season thoughts here. I have not planned any of this out on purpose.
All right.
You're gonna give the season so far a letter grade. A is, this has been the best IndyCar season on the planet. F is, this is the worst IndyCar season on the planet.
Okay. So halfway, I'm unqualified to answer this because I really became an IndyCar fan in 2018. So my range of years that I have is gonna be a lot smaller than a lot of people's is gonna be. I would say out of the 5 years that I've watched, this has to be, I think it's the best one so far. Not just saying that, I've got no stake to say it or not say it. I just think that even if you look from a championship, like driver's championship standpoint, I think it's tighter than it's been at this point in the season than it has been. And there's a number of drivers that can still run away with it in the top 5-6 that very easily could. And there's still, even beyond that, another 2 or 3 that are still in it, you know, very, very much in it mathematically. So it's a question for me. About a grade, I guess I would say like B+, A-. I mean, it's like it's right up there, and that's leaving room for something that would be even more amazing. You know, I think it's been a really satisfying year to watch as an IndyCar fan. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I would say a B or a B plus. I think for the most part, every race this year, even Texas, has been pretty good. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, going into all the top five in the standings are all within 50 points. The top 10 are about 100 back. So, you know, top five are theoretically, maybe top six are all within, or top seven are all within championship striking distance. And I was looking at kind of standings at the halfway point. I have some old like interview notes and whatnot. And the only other one I can recall that was kind of this close in the summer was 2019, going into Toronto. Rossi was 7 points back of Scott Dixon. I didn't write that part down. I could be wrong on who he was chasing, but anyway, he was 7 points back. But that didn't encapsulate kind of, you know, the top five or six being so close. You know, you are a Marcus Ericsson DNF from having, you know, and Alex Palou win from, you know, everything flipping around again. So, and you think about it, Palou's fifth in the standings, hasn't won a race yet. He's just been relatively consistent, minus, you know, Road America with his issue there. But mm-hmm. Power is 27 points back. Newgarden mm-hmm. is 32. So mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot that could still happen.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, Dixon still hasn't won a race yet.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you get it's in some of the things the woulda, coulda, shouldas too. You know, I was when you were talking about Ericsson, I was thinking, you know, he's one DNF away. Is like he's also one DNF, that Long Beach DNF he had when he kind of punched the throttle a little bit too much out of turn four and hit the wall and ended up in the beach over, you know, with the sitting in the chair on the side of the NBC cameraman. Love that. But if he doesn't DNF there, he was running P3 in that race. And so he's like one DNF away from even having a greater points lead. And you hear the drivers talk about it all the time, saying like this championship is so difficult. It's so difficult. And you can do the woulda, coulda, shouldas. But that's just, that makes it how cool, how tight that it actually is, because of all the different scenarios that can happen that can really turn things upside down. And I would expect, you know, we'll see a lot of jockeying from here to the end of the season.
Yeah, that Marcus Ericsson sitting next to the Marshall is definitely kind of one of the more, probably the funniest moment of the season so far. Unintentionally funny moments of the season so far, at least. But yeah, without that, he's got maybe a 45 or 50-ish point advantage. And you're going, mm-hmm. okay, Marcus Ericsson just needs to run consistent the second half of the year, and he's probably got a championship. Now mm-hmm. it's anybody's game. Even Alex mm-hmm. Rossi, at the beginning of the year, we said he can't do it. His team can't do anything right. Now he's seventh in the standings, so it's a lot of fun. Looking at the rookie class, though, we have, I think Lundgaard is 17 points up on David Malukas right now, and then Kirkwood, Ilott, Devlin are about 40 to 60 points back-ish, roughly. I don't really feel like doing the math in on the screen here, but what's impressed you about these rookies? Is there anyone that you think maybe got rushed along a little too soon? And, you know, what's your rookie class impression?
Look, these guys I think have been phenomenal. I don't think that when you look at the place that they are in the Drivers' Championship so far, I think it does not stack up against some of the earlier seasons that you would see guys that were higher maybe in previous seasons. But I think the talent that they've had has been significant. Like they seem like they are running themselves really close to the edge a lot of the time, and they're doing it within the margin that they have. Now, obviously, sometimes they're losing out on some of that margin with, you know, some of Malukas might have some errors here, Kirkwood might have some errors there, but they're so high quality from my viewpoint. And so I think that a lot of these guys, Ilott also, Lundgaard too, I mean, all four of those guys, they're getting their names in the broadcast every single weekend, pretty much at least one of those guys on merit, not just because, well, we've got to cover the rookies. It's because they're putting themselves up into the story and into the mix. And I think that's super impressive. And then you've got the other rookies that have come up. You know, DeFrancesco, he's taken some hits this year and you know, taken some heat on a few things. But I really appreciate that dude's mental fortitude and sticking with it and not folding. You know, his start that he had at Road America until the power incident, his start that he had at Road America was unbelievable. I mean, he went from like P21 to P14 within the span of like those first four, five, six, seven laps and was moving. He was hustling that Andretti car. I've really appreciated seeing his mental attitude that he's had to kind of withstand the onslaught that he's had to deal with, and some of it rightfully so, and I think he would say the same thing. And then I love seeing Calderon also out there, and she's pushing every single week to continue getting better in the way that she needs to get better. And I love that too. So I've been super happy personally with the rookie class.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to watch. And Tatiana, I almost wish she just had a little bit more of a team behind her, and maybe it's the Foyt showing, because she's kept it clean. Yeah, she hasn't had a ton of pace, and I think part of that is just, listen, I just need to get this car home in one piece. We don't have the best equipment. Let's just do the best I can every week and keep getting experience. Because there's one race that sticks out that she was top 13 or top 14. I don't remember what race it was.
It was the
Indy
GP.
Long Beach. Indy GP, and, okay. I knew it was...
Yeah, and Long Beach, I think, also. I think you're right. She was 16th at Long Beach, and I think 15th at the Indy GP.
All right, let's see here. At Long Beach, she was 16th. At the Indy GP, she was 15th. Yeah, so, you know, right there and moving up 10 spots, keeping it clean. Yeah. Even at a kind of a tricky start at Road America last week, she kept it clean. So I've been
finished every
impressed.
Race that she's been in. Finished every race. She hasn't torn stuff up. She had the one wreck. I think she had the one off at I think Barber in warm up maybe. But the funny thing about that one was that the funny thing about that one was that the team had told her she needs to push harder, you know, and so she had gone out and pushed but got over the edge a little bit. And that's what I really appreciate about the rookies is them trying to find where that edge is. You see the vets do it too. You know, you have to find where that place is, and it makes you better as time goes on. And that was a tiny little incident that she had that when she went off, and she's continued on, done a great job this season.
On that note, on the non-rookies, who's been disappointing this year to you?
Oh, dude, that's so hard to say. This is such a hard question, bro. It's not in my bones. I'll be the first one to say that forever. It is not in my bones. I mean, I don't know. I if you had said before, like a couple races ago, I think you could have said somebody like Rossi. You know, it would be like an obvious thing where it's like, oh, he's definitely not had the start he wanted to. He's done amazing in the last few races, the last three really, and the whole team has come together around him. I other than the normal stuff where someone says Rahal Letterman Lanigan's had a rough go of it, they've had a rough go of it. My thing that I'm looking forward to is seeing with them is where does it go from here? Because they're going to make changes, maybe not necessarily personnel, but they're going to start figuring stuff out. Hey, the directions we've gone haven't worked. We need to try some new things. So that's probably the number one thing that I'm interested to see is how does RLL shoot up, you know, likely. I mean, maybe not, but what do they do? What do they try to move forward from the place that they've been in so far this season?
Yeah, I mean, Rahal would be my obvious answer that I've probably said before. And even then, last weekend at Road America, they were, I guess 2 weekends ago at this point, they were better. So I think if I'm going to throw a probably not hot take for people who listen to other hosts on the show, but I've been a little bummed out with, and maybe not surprised, with Elio's street course efforts. It just doesn't feel like he has street course pace most of the time. Like, he's still a hell of an oval driver. And it might be, you know, that team expanding to two cars. It might not be all him, but that's been kind of the other one that stuck out to me is, like, you know, he's, now granted, didn't have the best month of May, but still had a decent race, and he's down in 17th below, you know, Lungard and below Graham Rahal.
Yeah. I think those MSR guys, though, the last bit of time, I don't know. They just, both he and Pagano, they seem to be, when I listen to those guys talk in interviews from the 500 on, I just get the sense that something's about to be unlocked for them. I don't know why, but just listening to the way that they're talking about things, I just get the sense that something's about to be unlocked for them. And hopefully so, because it'll be great for everybody if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, the more competitive teams, the better, in my opinion. But On that note, you mentioned, you know, Rossi earlier. Oops, I'm clicking on drivers' profiles here, and I just want to look at the point standings. But, you know, Rossi, who didn't have the greatest start to the season, probably not too much of his fault, is now seventh in the standings. So he's kind of in that, you know, that Pelot, Dixon, Rossi group of guys who could win but haven't won. Is there anybody to you that hasn't won a race that at this point in the season you would have expected to?
Well, I mean, I think definitely Pelot. I think you would have expected Pelot to win, you know, early on. And then, you know, Dixon, I think also, I mean, those are probably the top two guys that you would think would have won a race by now, but they still find themselves fifth and sixth in points, and they're right there, even having not won a race yet. And that's like, you know, that's a lot of what this is about. Dixon has finished all eight races so far this year, kept himself fairly clean the whole time. And up until last race at Road America with, you know, the Pelot Erickson incident, Pelot had finished every race this year. And so, yeah, I mean, I think those are the only two guys that, you know, it's kind of surprising that they haven't won. But, you know, up until this point in the season, you expect that a champ is going to win two or three races. You don't have to win in the first eight. You know, there's still nine more to go, and they've got a couple nine more shots to get those points. And yeah, it's like, just keep it clean and keep it in the top five, seven, and you're gonna be thereabouts. I mean, you see that with a lot of these guys. It's like, even Erickson, you know, he has the win at the 500. Power has the one win at Detroit, and he's Power's right there, second in points. So with that one win, and he's just been so consistent the whole year.
Are you sad Belle Isle is going away for the downtown Detroit layout, or happy?
I think with so many of these types of things, when you talk about, like, it's personal preference, you know what I mean? Like, course you're sad on the personal side of things. Like, oh man, that's so cool. Like, I enjoy the race so much. It's such a fun place to be and such a fun place to see, you know, you're racing on an island. You end up saying, though, okay, IndyCar is trying to grow the series. That's part of their effort. And like, I just trust a lot of those guys who are running things, because, you know, I think the last few years the series has kind of taken off in a lot of good directions with different things. So it's like, if those dudes are a lot smarter about that stuff than I am, I know that for sure. So if they think that moving the race downtown is going to be a better play, and it's going to be, sometimes you get forced into these things and you don't know what's happening behind closed doors, but I'm assuming that it's going there because you're going to grow stuff. And I saw right after the race, they showed the start finish line of the new race at the downtown track, and like the Renaissance Center is right in the background, like the GM building that's right you know, the start finish line. It looks cool, man. Like, I was like, whoa, that looks pretty rad, dude. So I trust that they're, you know, making right moves to get the goals that they're after, you know, which is growth, a lot of it.
The split pit lane intrigues me more and more every time I happen to stumble across that graphic, just because it's, you know, everybody says, okay, IndyCar should do something to stand out and be different. You know, you don't want a Drive to Survive copy, for example. Split pit lane, in addition to being difficult to say, is accomplishing that goal. So it's pretty cool. I don't know how it's going to work. I think that's part of the intrigue, is because it's never been done before, you can't imagine what it looks like or how it's going to operate.
Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Sarasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not, it's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5-Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
Or whatever, but I'm super intrigued.
Definitely. And you know, I think you made a really good point that you want those kinds of things that are like talking points, and you want to build up like that culture, you know, at that new track and stuff like that. And I think you know, you lose Scott Fountain at Belle Isle, you know, for Victory Lane, and the guys jumping in there for their celebration. I had seen, you know, on the broadcast, they had shown on the Detroit broadcast, they had shown these people that were in like these little floating cabanas. They were like floating on the river and stuff like that. This was like just like a B shot that they showed. I think it was at the very beginning of the broadcast when they were doing pre-race. You want to see like a Victory cabana. You know, like send these guys off onto some kind of boat or something like that, and just continue to build up these kind of like, you know, culture, iconic moments. That's what the whole Drive to Survive thing was. You know, it just like caught culture at just the right time, and you kind of build these culture around this with big things and with small things like this, and it just does a series right. And so I think, yeah, making these types of things with where the start finish line is and the Rensen in the background, you get the split pit lane, maybe some Victory cabanas. You know, throw out some super soakers in Victory Lane, and who knows what could happen, man.
Super soakers in Victory Lane. Sign me up. All right, looking back on the first half of the year, we're 8 races in. Is there one race that sticks out to you that's been, you know, kind of like your favorite race that you've watched so far?
A lot of great races. The Spindy GP. The rain affected Indy GP that we had this year. I just, that race for me was, I mean, it's one of those races where, you know, they're in between the slicks and the wets. And I heard some drivers saying it'd be cool if we could have an intermediate tire where it was right on the border. But man, did it provide some entertainment. I mean, guys were off all over the place in that race. That the outlap that Herta did in that race when he came in early before everybody else to get off of the rain tires and get onto the reds. I think it was the reds to get on slicks anyway. And then he took off out of the pits, and that outlap was ridiculous. And he was chasing Pato then when Pato came in, and that whole thing was bananas to me. I think just the all the stuff that happened in that race, there were guys going, you know, they were really hustling. You know, Tatiana had a great race because she was able to keep everything underneath her. And I think that I like that race also because of the aero screen, actually, and learning about some of the rain things that they'll be able to improve that. I think that was a really cool aspect of that. I'm always interested in what are the next things that's going to happen with those rain races in the aero screen, the technology. What's the next iteration and evolution of those things? They've got the second aero screen that's coming pretty soon, and then, you know, they'll incorporate some of these lessons that they've learned into those things. So for me, I thought that was awesome, and I thought the 500 this year was really, really awesome at the end. I mean, the red flag adding all the drama and stuff. There has not been a race this year that I have not enjoyed. That's not the case in past years. There have been some races in past years where I've been like, if I was a new fan watching, I'd be like, that was a little bit boring. But I think this year has been pretty good for me. Your favorite? What's been your favorite you've seen so far?
Hey, man, I want to give a different answer. It's hard because there's not one race that's been a total snoozer. You know, there's kind of like the middle third of Road America was kind of dull, but I mean, the beginning was pretty wild. The end was pretty exciting. So I feel like there was enough going on there. And, you know, Newgarden coming away with the $1 million prize is, you know, pretty notable from that one as well. I want to say Texas is one of my favorite this year, just because nobody was expecting anything from Texas. We were all, it's going to be Texas. Nobody cared. The drivers didn't care. The drivers didn't care that they were trying a little extra practice or a tire dragon. They were like, it's not going to work, and blah, blah, blah. And maybe it didn't necessarily completely work, but it was a good race, and we had a last lap pass there for the win. I was walking from wherever I was standing on pit lane to Victory Lane so I could get some pictures. And in that you know, 200-foot walk, we had a different guy win the race. So, yeah. You know, it was things like that that were pretty cool. You know, Jimmy Johnson finished sixth. I think that was, yeah, that was the race. Ferrucci subbed in the morning for Jack Harvey, who wasn't feeling well and was in a fire suit about 8 sizes too big for him. Didn't even have a seat that fit. Yeah. And he wheeled it home last to 10th. So it was, I'm going to go with Texas, which is probably may not be a super popular answer when people listen to this, but that's okay. But it's been a really fun first half of the year, and you're kind of looking ahead to the rest of the year. You know, we have a doubleheader at Iowa, Toronto, Mid-Ohio, Nashville again, and another IMS road course, Gateway, which is awesome, Portland, which is always chaotic, and Laguna, which has produced really good races since IndyCar came back. I don't know about you. The only one that I'm kind of like, not really all that pumped up about is the IMS road course again. Any chance to get to be at IMS is awesome, but when you've run the road course like 840 times in the past couple years, and some of it out of necessity, you know, COVID really screwed plans up and they had to adapt. I get it. But, you know, the guys pretty much know, drivers know, okay, this is the setup I'm probably going to use for this race. This is the tire strategy that's going to work. This is how it happened last year with NASCAR, so this is, you know, what to expect. So there's not a lot of unknowns going into that weekend. That'd be my only one maybe I'm not super excited about.
Let me ask you this. Suppose it was between like 16 races for the season, because suppose it's like right on the border right now where they want to get one more race on the schedule. But, you know, either IndyCar has to absorb a bigger loss in doing it, or a promoter is like, you know, it's like you can't quite get it going this year. Would you rather have this is not like a challenge question the way I'm framing it. Sounds like would you rather have 16, or would you want to have 17 and run that second race at IMS?
16.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah.
Just because you've seen enough there. You've seen enough at the road course.
And I think the road course racing has gotten better. Like the first couple years, mm-hmm. I didn't really think the races were all that interesting. Mm-hmm. But as the car has evolved over the last handful of years, the races are pretty good. It's just when you do it twice a year for the last, you know, 3 years now, and you know, we had the Harvest Grand Prix doubleheader weekend, so it's really like 6 times in the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a lot. I and many people have said this, if you could alternate the layout for maybe the summer race where they go back to, you know, using more of the oval turn one on the exit, could I then say, yeah, 17? All right, yeah, if we're going to make it slightly, switch it up slightly, sure. But in the current iteration, I'd be fine with 16.
Yeah, no, I respect it, man. I think that'll be the interesting thing, I think, going forward, is if you do continue to do another one on the IMS road course. I think at some point, probably something does change. And hopefully it's not just shortening the race by five or 10 laps and making an easier fuel window. You know, it's like, I understand why you have to do that sometimes, but yeah, hopefully you start getting those kinds of things. I know people talk about reversing the direction of the course, which gets to be difficult, you know, in terms of where they have curbing and runoff and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think it just makes you need to innovate. You know, it's like the people in the series, they know all these things too, I think. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with that race. Does it get replaced with a different track? Some other track, maybe Watkins Glen or something like that. Just, you know, hopefully maybe. Does it get replaced or, you know, with something like that? Or do they just kind of, you know, innovate something about the you know, the second Indy road course race?
Yeah, I would love Watkins.
Or nothing, or maybe they keep it the same.
Yeah, I listen. If they kept it the same, it's not like I'm whining like, oh, 17 races is too many or anything. Like, it's fine. I'm complaining for the sake of complaining, but I'm not gonna lose sleep or say, you know, doom and gloom. IndyCar is doomed because they go to IMS too much or anything crazy like that. Like it's fine, but
yeah.
If you know the other races that I mentioned, which one or two are you most excited about? Is there anyone that stands out? Like, I can't wait to go back to Nashville or Gateway or whatever it may be.
I just think that you said it about Texas. I think it really captures it well, man, that like you just don't know what's going to happen. You know, like that's why you go.
Yeah.
And because you don't know what weather there's going to be. And weather can play such a massive factor in this stuff. You know, if it's not blazing hot and taking away from you know, the grip on the track, and that you get a little extra downforce in the air, then that helps the cars to stick better. I think they did try something, you know, a little bit different at Texas with dragging it this time. I think they dragged something over the track, you know, and the grip ended up being pretty close to, you know, pre-PJ one times. Not exactly. I mean, it was closer. It wasn't the exact same. But I just think that that is the thing that I think just makes it, racing interesting, is you just don't know what set of circumstances you're going to get. And a lot of times it does fall within that same 60-80% window. But you get those times, those Indy GPs, where it's like, you don't know what the weather's going to do. And it's that 10-20% of the time where something crazy happens. I think the return to Iowa is super cool to see, because I heard an interview with Elio yesterday, and he was talking about the last time he raced it. I think he said was 2017. And so he was racing it before the current aero kits, and was saying like how crazy different the car feels being there now. Not having just not raced it, but then with the different aero configuration that they have now. And so I think I'm really excited to see that race. I think going back to Toronto, I mean, haven't been there for, 2019.
3 years, yeah.
So, I mean, that I think is going to be very interesting to see again. I think Mid-Ohio is always interesting. It's harder to pass there, but it puts a premium on qualifying. And I think having some of those races, you get a couple races every year where qualifying is kind of the premium, and you have to be good in qualifying. I think that's always fun to see. Nashville, with the track changes that they've made there, it'll be interesting to see how that races again this year. Like you said, Gateway is always cool. That'll still be its normal nighttime race. And then, Portland. And who knows, once it comes down to the end of the season, you get down to Portland and Laguna, and you're really talking point stuff. And that's a fun time. And then you're also usually, for those last two races of the year, you're usually looking at like a couple extra entries from somewhere.
Yep.
That may not happen this year because of, you know, chassis being at a bit of a premium right now, but who knows what's going to happen. You know, you could get a few extra entries that are happening there that are unexpected ones, and that would be super fun to see too. I think the back half of the year is like, I think it's going to be really, really fun. And who knows? I mean, the amount of passing that's happened at the Indy Road Course over the last, like you were saying, the first couple editions were, you know, you've got the first couple editions of races at the Indy Road Course. They're kind of like, oh, it's fun, it's new, it's exciting. And then there was, from what I've seen in the data anyways, the passing then got to be a little bit tight for a while, and it's really opened back up again significantly. And so I am interested to see kind of what happens in that Gallagher Grand Prix when they go back to the Indy GP to see what happens, or the Indy Road Course to see what happens there.
Is it a mind-boggling thing? I'm trying to like say what I want to say without cursing, because I don't feel like having to edit it, that Max Chilton's dad's, I guess it's not his company anymore, is now not only back in IndyCar sponsoring a race, their signage is in IMS, and they are on Scott McLaughlin's car. I almost called that car Max Chilton a couple times in Detroit. Is it a little bit odd? And I mean, cool, but odd to you as well?
I think it's so cool. I mean, like, because a lot of times I think what you see in racing is you'll see brands get into it for a little while and then they exit. They're like, okay, either we got what we wanted out of this, you know, whatever we are looking for, we got what we wanted, or we didn't get what we wanted, and so we're not going to do it anymore. And so I think it's really cool for Gallagher, and even now, you know, it's like it's like a family-owned insurance company. So the fact that they saw some type of value out of it, and whether that's a business-to-business thing or it's, you know, it's something where, you know, they feel like they're getting business to their company through it, through their consumer products or whatever that they sell. That's, I don't know, but I think it's great that they came back, because I think it just shows that whatever they're doing right now, they're getting value out of it. And I'd actually be really interested in a case study to with a lot of these companies to see a lot of times, like, what are your guys' aims that you're actually after right now? Like Sancio coming on, and sometimes it's a local, you know, type of thing, like you get direct supply that's running on VK's car, and they're based in Milwaukee, and so they sponsor him for Road America because it's a whole kind of, you know, company outing and that whole kind of thing. They got pride in the race and that kind of thing. It'd be interesting to see the different angles the companies take in their sponsorship, kind of these like case studies of how they do that, because I agree with you. I think it's really interesting that Gallagher came back on in that way, in such a kind of a big way too.
The part that made me laugh was it was like an 8 a.m. press, 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. press release, like, oh, Gallagher's back, and everybody was kind of like, Gallagher? Like the Max Shelton Gallagher? Like, it just kind of caught everybody off guard, and it's cool. It's just, you know, you're like, oh, not Max Shelton? All right, well, cool. So, oh, that was mean. Anyway, we'll wrap it up there, and Andy, thanks for joining. Where can everybody find you on Twitter, I think, which is where you post your graphics the most?
Yeah, I post my graphics on Merrick Speed, so it's M-E-R-R-I-C-K, Speed, Merrick Speed, that's it.
Awesome, man. Well, guys, thank you for listening. Andy, thanks for joining. Next week, we'll be back to preview Mid-Ohio. Mr. Malukas will be making his co-hosting debut next week, so I'm pretty pumped about that. I hope he is, too. I hope he can deal with us as a co-host. It's a lot to handle, but no, I'm kidding. I'm super excited about that, and should have another announcement or two in the near future. No IndyCar this weekend, no F1 this weekend, but IMSA is racing at Watkins Glen, so I think that's a 6-hour race, so tune into that. I'm sure it'll be on Peacock, but everybody have a lovely weekend of racing.
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age, because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run, where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.